Patricia Camilleri, Director of the Communications and Alumni Relations Office here at the University of Malta. In this series called Research Matters, I shall be discussing the many research projects undertaken by the university's academics from all fields of study. I'm very pleased to have with me on Research Matters today Dr. Carmen Sammut. Dr. Sammut is a lecturer at the International Relations Department here at the University of Malta. She teaches international communications, public diplomacy, and also she lectures on issues of culture and gender in international affairs. 3 years ago, she began to develop a course in international relations and environmental issues. She holds a PhD in Media and Communications from Goldsmiths College at the University of London and an MA, PGCE and BA from the University of Malta. She is a media and culture researcher, and her book Media and Maltese Society was published in 2006 by Lexington Press USA. She also contributed various book chapters in edited publications. Her current research interest is in media coverage of migration in European islands and public awareness campaigns of environmental concerns. Before entering academia, she worked as a journalist with State Broadcasting, where she mainly engaged with the writing and production of foreign news and current affairs programmes. But since the advent of pluralism in 1991, she chose to freelance for various media outlets. Since 2007, she has presented Stampachara, an ongoing weekly discussion programme on RTK. She also features regularly in news analysis programmes on this radio station, Campus FM. Welcome to Research Matters.
Thank you for inviting me.
Well, you're here today to talk about this seminar, which you recently coordinated, entitled Climate Change, National Responses to Global Action, and that was held at the Aula Magna at the Valletta campus. But before going into the seminar in detail, perhaps you could just say a very brief word about the department, what its aims are, have been, what its students do, why a student perhaps would even do a degree in international relations.
International relations, it is a young department. I believe it was set up around 10 years ago. And the individuals it was Professor Joe Perotta, who was the first head of department, and then he was later joined by Isabel Callea, who's now the current head of department. And we look at, relations between states, the key international institutions, foreign policies of various countries and various regional institutions, etc. And also, my key interest in international relations is in the new remits. Since the end of the Cold War, the discipline has, which was previously concerned with military issues, with balance of power issues, etc., it extended its remits. And I'm mainly interested in soft power issues. Last year, when Hillary Clinton became the Secretary of State of the United States, she particularly emphasized the role of soft power, which she referred to as smart power, which somehow integrates the need for the states to communicate with foreign publics. And that is deemed to be important because military coercion, it cannot really change people's behaviors. We've seen this happen in Iraq. We've seen this happen in a number of contexts. So you need to win people. You need to win people's hearts and minds, and this is what public diplomacy is about. And this is what interests me mainly in this area. Obviously, the environment also emerged as a pillar of international relations scholarship in recent years, as nation states cannot act on their own, and They have to negotiate, they have to, you know, meet, and they have to agree. At times, you know, it's difficult to put aside national interest to agree on international issues, as we have seen during the Copenhagen summit. These are new remits which I work, you know, I'm more interested in these new remits, and I've been developing courses in these areas
over the past 4 years. And the students that take international relations, as you say, are going to have to then go out into their working world, whether they go into diplomacy or whether they go into the Foreign Office or whatever they do with their degree, they're going to need these new skills.
And definitely, yes.
That's why it's important for a university to be studying, obviously, the basic canons sometimes or the basic work, but always looking forward to see what skills our students are going to be needing.
And our students, they are needed. Malta needs people who are able to work with EU institutions, for instance. We need people in our Foreign Office. We need to, you know, we have, there's a need for people to have a knowledge, not merely theoretical knowledge, but even, you know, these new areas which are becoming increasingly important. We're living in the post-September the 11th era, and that increasingly made us focus on the impact of culture, whereas before, you know, political and economic issues were at the forefront of the discussion. Now culture has also gained an importance. Issues of multiculturalism, ethnicity, the radicalization of young people in Europe, of young immigrants in Europe. How do you combat terrorist cell groups? These are new issues which are, you know, gaining quite a lot of ground, even in international fora. I participate in a journalism network for the Mediterranean region that includes academics, media people, journalists from the whole region, and we meet on a regular basis to discuss issues and to make proposals for ministerial meetings at a European level, because these issues, which appear to be soft and people may not maybe acknowledge their importance, they are increasingly gaining ground. These are important issues, and there is a lot of interest from students. What has made our department even more interesting in the past few years is the number of Erasmus students which we attract, which make teaching, for me, it has made the teaching experience much richer, in the sense that when I met my environment and IR students this year, I realized that in this class I had people coming from Ecuador, from Japan, from Australia, Ireland, Russia, Albania, Bulgaria, you know, from most parts of the world. And since the Copenhagen summit was coming up, it was supposed to take place in the middle of my course, I thought it was a very interesting opportunity for us, enriching opportunity, I think, and it added interest to the whole course, to reflect how various nations were looking at the potential outcomes of the Copenhagen summit.
And hence your seminar.
Hence the seminar, and it grew, and then obviously in environmental issues, it is not merely politicians who are involved. I mean,
looking through the program, I can see that you've got together quite a wide range: economists, engineers, politicians, media people, environmentalists. There's a whole gamut.
Because the environment requires a multi-stakeholder approach. It was scientists who drew attention to what was happening to the climate, and it took them quite a number of years to agree, at times they still disagree. You know, it took politicians quite a number of years to respond. We now know that environmental issues require a multi-stakeholder approach that includes various spheres. And that is why then when we started thinking about this symposium, we thought, okay, let us include the stakeholders, because one of the roles of this university is to provide a platform for a public sphere discussion of crucial matters. And it was, you know, high time that people from who are interested and who are very passionate about the environment, I have to say, met and discussed the outcomes of Copenhagen.
And perhaps they and feel the comfortable. They feel comfortable coming to university because it's not a partisan
it's
place.
It is an autonomous structure.
An autonomous structure, and so you've got not only politicians but politicians on both
On the three sides.
On three sides. When it comes. On three sides.
And I cannot overemphasize the importance of civil society. I feel that environmentalism actually was crucial for the development of a local civil society since the 60s, 70s, 80s and 90s, let's say. They helped put the environment on the political agenda and on the economic agenda of this country. And I feel that civil society is important because you have people who have the passion, who have the expertise, who are willing to act as autonomous structures, who do not have the economic interest or the partisan interest. So from time to time they can, you know, in a way they can alert us to what's happening. They can act as watchdogs. I was surprised at the number, when I started receiving the response from various groups. I didn't know that there were so many environmental groups in this island looking at, you know, particular areas. There's now even an organization for the importers of alternative energy equipment technology. You can have organizations who have people responsible, who are looking at climate change as part of their corporate social responsibility. It was quite, it was interesting to meet all these people and to see them come together and take part in the discussion.
And it was good. The NGOs are something very close to my heart. And I think an occasion like that, a symposium where you're going to get them together, because sometimes the NGOs tend to work separately,
yes.
which is okay, but it's nice to have an opportunity when they can get together and see themselves as a pillar of the Maltese society.
Yes.
Because sometimes they don't see themselves. I think you're right in saying that the environmental NGOs, because they've been quite verbal about the various problems over the last couple of years or 3 years or whatever, people are aware, and they're aware of the significance. I hesitate to say power of the NGOs, but the significance of the NGOs.
NGOs, well, they are significant at a national level in the sense that I feel that they have an important role in sensitizing public opinion. But even internationally now, if you look at international structures like the United Nations, you have thousands of NGOs that enjoy an advisory role, a formal advisory role with the UN. The European Union has provided new opportunities for the Maltese civil society to, you know, it does lend an ear to NGOs on a number of issues. So, NGOs are, you know, important stakeholders. The public is an important stakeholder. And that is why we felt that, you know, this symposium should grow, you know, from a classroom situation to a public event. Because I feel that we still need to work work really hard when it comes to public opinion. There are a number of initiatives and strategies that have been published, and but how are we going to, you know, apply, and how is the public going to respond to these strategies? We've seen some of the initiatives. We've seen the government offering a number of carrots, if you'd like to, and people did not respond as enthusiastically as we may have wished. So in a way, sensitizing the public is important, or else the state will need to use the stick. As we need to meet EU targets, we are bound by EU targets. So in a way, you know, and also we have a responsibility. I mean, we cannot abdicate our role in all this. We need to lower our emissions as a country as well. But apart from this aspect, the mitigation aspect, we also need to adapt. I already mentioned that in the Copenhagen summit, there was an agreement that we're going to work towards, to aim towards the 2-degree target, an increase of 2 degrees Celsius in the global climate. And that has implications for us. We need to adapt our lifestyles, our how are we going to cope with warmer climate, a warmer weather in summer, when it is barely bearable as it is? How are we going to cope, you know, when it comes to with a different sort of different cycles of rainfall? How is the sea being affected? The Peter island. Gutt was speaking about the geological survey. He's a geologist researching at Durham University. We've had, in the first hour, we've had a number of papers by Isabel Kalea, who outlined the role of the environment in IR, in international relations as a discipline. Then we've had Professor Lino Briguglio, who spoke about the impact on small islands. We've had Peter Gutt, who spoke about his research as a geologist. And then Simone Borch looked at, she's a legal expert, and she looked at the implications of Copenhagen for international law. And we also had Vanya Walker-Lee, who is an activist in civil society. She's a journalist, and she has followed most of the summits, on most of the environmental summits. I don't think that we have anyone in Malta who has been to all the summits. And Vanya was there as a discussant of the papers. She brought her insights and her experience. Then we've had, I chaired a 2.5-hour discussion. It was the longest discussion I ever chaired.
And quite animated, I believe.
It was animated. And
the British understatement there.
It was interesting because time just flew, and most of the people, you know, normally when you're sitting down and you're listening, you're for 2 hours, 2.5 hours, you start wishing that, start looking at your watch and you start wishing that time goes by and you can go away for your lunch. But, people still had things to say. The discussion was really animated. And I have to say that, there were a number of people who gave their input. We've had in the panel discussion, apart from the politicians, the Honourable George Pulicino and Leo Brincat, we've had the spokesperson for Alternativa, Carmelca Copardo. Then we've had people who are the people who are behind our civil service, who are, you know, who are the movers, if you like, of climate change strategies, like Dr. Chris Chantar, the permanent secretary. We've had David Spiteri Gingell, who was very instrumental in our national policy. You mentioned Marco Cremona, who's a hydrologist who's concerned with the water. But then we've had Peter Grima from Enemalta, and Enemalta is, it really, really needs to look at emissions if we are to meet our targets. Mm-hmm. We've also had people who involved media people in the panel. And we've had Caroline Muscat, who is an assistant editor to the Sunday Times, and Harry Vassallo, who is editor of Illum, and both of them were there to, you know, assess, well, the discussion and to give their input and their insights, as both of them are also, they specialize and they have a lot of experience in environmental action. So it was interesting. And also we've had a lot of input from the floor, and we've had a number of embassies who sent representatives. We were honored with the presence of the new Australian High Commissioner. We've had representatives from the embassies of Germany, the Netherlands, China, and a number of
very diverse.
Yes,
group.
A very diverse, and well, the United Kingdom. I'm sorry, I'm sure I'm forgetting.
And the discussion has actually then gone on into the media. There was many reports on the symposium.
Yes,
and one hopes that something like this is going to create more discussion.
I feel that we did achieve our aim to stir a public sphere discussion. We tend to look at the world from a very local perspective. All countries do this. If you look at the reportage of foreign news, we tend to report the world from a very local perspective. And these days, as many news organizations worldwide have less money available, they're cutting down on international reportage. International news is marginalized very often. We get less of it. In a globalized world, where we need to know more about the world, not less. And when it comes to climate change, we felt that we needed to bring Copenhagen to Malta to look at the implications. If there was inaction, we need to discuss why there was inaction. One of my colleagues here was an environmentalist, a friend of mine. He wrote to me before the symposium and said, Carmen, do you still intend to go ahead with the seminar? You know, things do not look good for the world. And I said yes, because in a way the debate needs to continue. At an academic level, I feel that the discussion and the papers were important, and we're trying to publish the proceedings.
But I was going to ask if we were going to have something permanently.
We're hoping to publish this, or if we don't manage to find enough funds. So if there's anyone out there listening who has money, we're, you know...
Nice appeal there.
We would like to publish the proceedings because it has academic value for the discipline in itself. It will be a record of what was stated. We're getting the panel discussion transcribed because the debate in itself was very interesting. Hopefully we will, you know, take other initiatives. But I feel that our department should, you know, put international affairs on the public agenda more often. So this will not be our last public discussion, yeah. Definitely.
And the students themselves actually did participate, didn't they?
Yes.
And I think it would be nice to sort of mention what they did, because I know that you were really pleased with their interventions.
I was very pleased with the input from the students. We've had workshops, 4 concurrent workshops in the afternoon, and they were making presentations on various topics. I gave them the freedom to choose the topic, and I gave them this freedom. I mean, okay, they were guided then, and I had several meetings with them to ensure that they were on the right track. But I gave them this freedom to give room for more creativity and for thought, you know, for them to intellectually engage with their subject. And we've had people looking at, one student looked at, you know, emissions that are coming from agriculture, mainly belching and the flatulence of cows, which produce more emissions than, you know, power stations and cars.
So I've heard.
So she was looking at international initiatives on this issue. Someone else was looking at moving borders. Now, as glaciers are melting, you know, there are moving borders between countries now. What are the implications of this for international affairs? The implications of the Arctic melting and you have this scramble between a number of countries, the US, Norway, Russia. Russia has already, you know, flagged the seabed, just in case, you know, so that they will start exploiting the huge fuel resources that are available in that region. So there were people who are looking at the impact of the unsettled science, he called it, in the sense that you still have scientists who are quite skeptical about climate change per se, and the political implications of this. How is this, you know, unsettled science at times being exploited by for political reasons?
Well, when you think of reasons, the fuss they made during the Copenhagen conference about that leaked email of East Anglia University.
That's
that was jumped on by the those who are skeptics
Are skeptics. And then there are issues of national interest. So many countries are saying, yes, I mean, we will agree, even the EU said we will even agree to a 30% reduction in emissions if the rest of the world agrees. Now, there's always that phrase, the rest of the world agrees. Australia, they almost lost, you know, their government. The leader of the opposition was ousted, and the prime minister was defeated in parliament when he tried to introduce a cap-and-trade system, as a lot of parliamentarians were saying, this is going to put us in at a disadvantage when it comes to, you know, it's going to nibble at our competitiveness at an international level. The U.S. said, we will not move unless China moves. And, you know, so these were the processes that were being explored. And these are the issues which we explore in our class.
It must have been an excellent opportunity for your students to sort of hone their debating skills as well, and their preparation skills.
Yes, and their presentational skills, to speak in public. I have to say that it was also an opportunity for the international students who are here for a semester, maybe a year, an academic year, to become familiar with Maltese, you know, issues. And people who come here, and I'd say about 60 or 70% of the students in my class were international this year, it was an opportunity for them to familiarize. They want to know the context in which the island issues.
Well, if they've chosen to come here, one presumes it's because they're interested.
They did it for a reason. Mm. And some of them are even interested then to stay or to come back for postgraduate studies about Malta now, because they became more familiar, you know, I'm sure that it is a positive thing.
Well, I'm afraid our time has run out. I'd like to thank Dr. Carmen Samud for coming in to Research Matters today. Thank you.
Thank you.
I do hope you can join us again next week for another edition of Research Matters. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.